Mishnah regarding Hegdish says that if someone gives a field to Hegdish and wants to redeem it, he gives a certain amount of money for each kur of plantable land. The Mishnah says if the land had in it an area that was 10 tefachim deep or rocks that were 10 tefachim high, they're not measured along with the rest of the field. Gemara asks, those areas should at least become Hegdish on their own and should therefore also have to be redeemed. You can't say any piece of land smaller than a kur is not redeemed in this way based on the calculation of money because the Braisa says that it is. Maruk Bachama said, the Mishnah is discussing these deep areas that were filled with water and are therefore not fit for planting and therefore must be redeemed at regular market value and not based on the set amount per core like the rest of the field. If so, then even if they're less than 10 tefachim deep, they should be redeemed in this way because they're still not fit for planting. Where it says an area less than 10 tefachim deep that's filled with water is viewed as a puddle of the field, not as a separate area. Similarly, a rock less than 10 tefachim tall is considered a bump in the field, not a separate area. Now, Zokling Mar Vaiter, regarding selling the land, the Mishnah says if a person says, I'm selling you a core of land, and the land has in it an area that is 10 tefachim deep, or rocks that are 10 tefachim high, they are not measured along with the rest of the field. On that Mishnah, Marukva said, even if the deep area is not filled with water, it's not counted along with the land. Again, so Marukva said, even if the deep area is not filled with water, it is not counted along with the land. Rav Papa explained, when a person buys land, he wants it to be one big piece of land and not have to look like a few separate pieces of land, which is what the deep areas and high rocks would tend to do. So now, to our sugya, what would halacha be in our Mishnah with regard to kedushin? When the man gives kedushin with the condition that he has a core of land, and then we find that they're in the land, they're separated by these deep ditches or rocks, do we compare it to Hegdish, and therefore if the deep area is plantable, it's viewed as part of the land, or do we compare it to a sale and it's not? The Gemara says it's more logical to compare it to the case of Hegdish, because he can tell the woman the fact that the field has these deep areas will not affect you, because I will work the field and bring the produce to you. Zuck, the next Mishnah Rameyah says, we learn from a pasuk by the condition of the people of Bnei Gad Reuven, Tanai Bnei Gad Reuven, that any condition has to be double-sided in order to be effective. Meaning, like, if A, then B. If not A, then not B. Since that's how the condition was made by Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven, he said, if you go fight in Eretz Yisrael, you will inherit land on the east side of the Yarden, and if you don't go and fight, you will not inherit land on the east side of the Yarden. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel disagrees with the Drash. He says that a double condition was needed there, because if not, we would understand the condition that if they don't go and fight, they lose even a regular portion of Eretz Yisrael itself. Therefore, he holds that any other condition also doesn't have to be double-sided. It was a special reason by Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven. It had to be a regular condition. It doesn't have to be Tanai Kafel. Frek the Gemara B'chinim Ben Gamliel seems to have refuted the drush of Remeir. And for the Gemara, Remeir says the words Be'eretz Kanan in the pasuk are extra and teaches the concept of a double-sided condition in Tanai Kafel. Rechanina would say that these words are not extra because they needed to clarify that their portion would not be in Gilad but would rather be in Eretz Yisrael proper. So Gemara Vayter, Bryce says, Chanim and Galil says we can compare the case of Gad and Reuven to the following mashal. A father says one son should inherit field A, another son should inherit field B, a third son should give 200 zuz and then it should inherit field C. And if he does not give 200 zuz, he should inherit along with his brothers. It's only because of the father's end statement. He said if he does not give, then he should inherit along with his brothers, that the son inherits along with the brothers if he doesn't give. Similarly, Moshe's doubling of the condition only served to include Gad and Reuven in the Shir and Eretz Yisrael. It was not meant to teach that a condition has to be double-sided. The Gemara asks, the mashal is very different than the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Chanina said that if the condition of Moshe had not been doubled, Gad and Reuven would not have even gotten the share in Eretz Yisrael. And the Braisa seems to say that the doubling of the condition only secured them a piece of Eretz Yisrael, but that they would never have lost their land in Gilad. Where it says the Braisa and the Mishnah are at different stages of Rabbi Chanina's conversation with her mayor, and therefore take on different understandings depending where he was in the conversation at that point in time. Frek the Gemara, according to her mayor, we can understand that when the pasuk says imtativ seis. He has to give a positive and a negative, so that should be binding. However, according to Rav Chanina, why do we need both sides to make over here in the pasuk to make it binding? And anything more without the second part of the pasuk, we would have thought if someone does a mitzvah, he gets reward. If he doesn't do mitzvah, he does averus. He doesn't get reward, but he also doesn't get punished. The pasuk therefore has to teach it. A positive person gets punished for doing averus. And Avram made Eliezer make a shua by when he was going to get Rivka. He said the positive and the negative. Now, he went through the both sides of the shua. Now, according to Rameyas, makes sense, but according to Rabbi Chanina, why do you have to do that? And the second part of the statement was telling the Eliezer that if the girl wants to come back but her family does not agree, you should not bring her against their will. In fact, when the back and forth between Avram and Eliezer says, He asked, what should I do if the woman does not want to return to Eretz Yisrael with him? Avram said, if the woman does not want to return to Eretz Yisrael with you, etc. Now, you know, don't bring her. Now, why did Avram have to repeat the question that he was asked? Or says he was telling Eliezer, if the woman's family agrees to send her, but she herself doesn't want to go with you, don't take her against her will. According to Rav Meir, we can understand why the pasuk first says, Im b'chukai se teleichu, and then says, Im b'chukai se masu. Double, you need both sides. However, why is the negative stated according to Rav Chanina Mar said, like we said before, because we would think if someone follows the Torah, there's a reward. If he doesn't follow the Torah, there's no reward, but no punishment in the Torah. Therefore, teaches that there's punishment for not following the Torah. One more question. According to Rav Meir, we can understand why the pasuk says, Im toivu ushmatem, and then says, V'im timanu umrisem. How you both sides. However, why is the negative needed according to Rav Chanina Mar said, we would think again that if one follows the Torah, there's a reward. If he doesn't follow the Torah, there's no reward, but there's no punishment in the Torah. Therefore, it has to teach that there's punishment for not following the Torah.